It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as you might be able to tell if you're listening very carefully, America's favorite soccer dad is on the road again, this time in sunny downtown Atlanta, or Atlanta anyway.
Yeah, nowhere near downtown, about 30 miles northeast probably.
Oh, good poke. He's been putting some miles on lately. You got to get that gasoline while it's still expensive, right?
Exactly.
Because after all, the administration says it's down 2 cents.
What a win.
Ah, yeah, you add that to the savings from your 4th of July, and you still got nothing. But I digress. Anyway, welcome to all of the regulars. You know that we come in here and do this every Saturday because of you guys. And if you went away, we would too, or we'd stay away. But we don't want that to happen. And anybody who is catching the show for the first time or is new, either you were told about it or you just sort of happened by it and your radio was set correctly, you're holding over from Angela and Howard or whatever it is, welcome. And try to listen for the whole hour. We'll discuss all kinds of fun, pertinent things. Everybody in the world is somehow affected by money and the conditions and the environment and the economy and so on. And there's just so much going on right now. It would take hours and hours to explain it all. So we'll hit what we think are the highlights, unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, in which case we will put you to the front of the class and we'll talk about what you want to talk about. A lot of things on the agenda today. The market is weird. Yeah, you could probably say that every week, but you wouldn't be as right as you were this week. We've got a few other things, too. So just stick around and pop in to anytime you want to with your questions. Just pick up the phone. It can be personal finance. It can be tax. We aren't tax advisors, but we know a lot about tax, and we do a lot of advising on the planning of the tax situation. And it's December already, somehow, which means there's some things that we got to be thinking about between now and the end of the year if you want to really do a good job in your own taxes, and who doesn't. Meanwhile, another roller coaster ride on Wall Street this week, which didn't end the way I hoped it would, but then again, it didn't kill us either. So that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger, then we should be feeling pretty good.
It was another week that really felt like we got slaughtered, but we didn't. The numbers weren't as bad as the overall feel of the week, and we even saw some late buying into the close on Friday that sort of saved us a little bit. Thursday and then the buying at the close on Friday both really helped make the week a little bit better than what it felt like, but it wasn't great. But it certainly wasn't as bad as some of the weeks we saw last year during the early COVID stages. And a lot of people are blaming this on the new Omicron, or as I like to call it, the Oh My God variant.
I like that.
But it's not really about that. That's adding to the uncertainty in the market. But I really think this was more Fed related than anything else. It was only a week ago I gave some kudos to President Biden for renominating Jerome Powell as the Fed chair. And then he took that new nomination and decided to just
he bit you.
Reverse course, basically, saying he just realized, apparently, that this inflation might not be transitory.
Yeah, that word is verboten now.
Yeah, he said it's time to stop using that word. And I feel like if you've been listening to this show, you may have known that about a year ago. But he just realized it and decided to say it this week, and the market did not like that. They're talking about speeding up the tapering, which was supposed to end in June. That could now end in March.
Or it could just not happen, too.
Yeah, it also sounds like rate hikes. Well, I don't believe this personally, but he made the case sort of that rate hikes could be on the table for early next year, which I don't see that happening.
Not going to happen.
I really don't.
Nope.
No. I think what Powell is doing is just readying the market for rate hikes in late 2022 or early 2023, and this is probably going to be a minor speed bump in the stock market, but not a derailment from what I can tell. No. I don't think it's that urgent. I don't think he feels the urgency to do rate hikes right away because the economy is just on fire. And I know the inflation is severe, but there are signs that it is easing in certain parts of the economy, and I think that will prevail. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm not as worried as the market was this week about the
tapering and so on was probably going to happen sooner. He thought that at 8:29 yesterday morning, and at 8:31 he was rethinking. That was the release of the jobs number.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. We'll get to that in a minute, but I don't think that one data point is what he's making these decisions off of. It's the trend line that's important. The overall result of all of that was that the S&P dropped 1.2%, the Dow was down 0.9%, and the NASDAQ was down 2.6%. Really interesting, the interest rate on the 10-year note dropped from over 1.5% to about 1.35%, mm-hmm. and commodity prices fell. So kind of an interesting reaction, not what I would have expected to that kind of Fed news.
The market is 180 degrees out of sync with the Fed right now. They don't believe what their eyes or ears, I'm not sure, but they're telling them, uh-uh, in many respects.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry about that.
The old hotel room office, huh?
yeah, exactly. I don't know who would be calling me. I don't know if anyone knows I'm here. So,
weird. Well, you know for sure it's not me.
Yeah, exactly. The worry, I think what the market's telling us is that they are telling the Fed that the more hawkish stance that Powell was indicating this week could cause a recession, and I don't disagree with the market on that. I also don't think that the stance is going to be as hawkish as what the market is making it out to be. The last thing in the world the Fed wants to do is cause a recession. Talk about a working yourself out of a job. Powell would be gone in 10 minutes if he did that.
So, isn't that the truth?
So I just don't see that happening. I think it's just posturing and getting the market ready for some moves that would ease the inflation over the next 18 months. So that's what I think.
There are 535 people who could cause a recession next year, and there's 330 million of the rest of us. So if you can figure out which of those 535 is, all we need is half plus one to say, let's not do anything stupid. And I believe that number's growing.
Yes, I think it is too.
We're seeing signs of intelligent life flicker in the halls of Congress. But it's only a flicker.
Barely.
Anyway, we've got the oddest jobs report analysis coming up right after the break. And I couldn't get into it before the break because there just wouldn't be time. This one is a weird one. And how to make sense out of it all is, hopefully, one of the reasons you're listening to this program. Because we'll tell you what really happened shortly. Meanwhile, we got to pay some bills and get some thoughts together for right after. Don't go away. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question momentarily, but I have a couple of things I want to touch on first. First, a big happy birthday to an American icon who turned 108 this past week. That is the moving assembly line invented by Henry Ford in Detroit 108 years ago, and it quite literally changed the world.
Nice.
Yeah, changed him too. Didn't make him a nice guy, but made him a rich bad guy. So, whatever.
No doubt.
Anyway, those of you who follow us a long time know that we are ardent supporters of the fair tax. If you don't know much about the fair tax, it is a whole different way of thinking and doing, and it's lost a lot of its prominence lately, but not for lack of trying. When the people who are truly dedicated, we'll get it started again, hopefully, when all this dust settles. But anyway, fair tax is one word, and their website, if you want to learn about the fair tax itself. It's fairtax.org. Well, the Fair Tax has launched a little service that they put on the web. It's called the Fair Tax Marketplace. And that is a place where if you have a good or a service that you are selling or buying, and if you just want to look around at like-minded people's ideas, there is a new website called fairtaxmarketplace.com in this case. It's a commercial venture rather than an org. And it's all one word, Fair Tax Marketplace. You go in there and you'll see who's doing what around the area and see if maybe you fit in. It might give you a way to get some exposure if you're a small business person or something like that. So we do love those people and we love their dedication. It is just the best possible concept that's so hard to get people behind, but we won't stop trying. All right, trivia question brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. I'm going to be doing a few things about what's going on with Social Security, so I thought I'd start out with a very simple trivia question today. Social Security was originally designed to replace what percent of your pre-retirement wages? 10, 100, 80, whatever. What percent was it designed to handle? And, of course, the reason I'm asking this is because far too many people think, I'll just get Social Security and live happily ever after. It isn't designed for that, and you're not going to be happy if you take that attitude. All right, lines are open, 904-222-8255. Jobs, 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 jobs. Started out pretty well this week, didn't you think, on Wednesday with ADP?
Yeah, the ADP was really strong. It came in at 534,000 created, and it beat expectations. Mm-hmm. So really, any number over a half million is going to be a strong number, strong month. So I was pleased with that one. The Friday's non-farm payrolls report, not so much. The headline number, whew, it was a big dud. 210,000 versus 548,000 expected. That is terrible.
Oops.
Yeah, but there was some good numbers in the report. The unemployment rate dropped to 4.2%. That's a post-pandemic low. The labor force participation rate ticked up to 61.8%. Average hours worked increased and beat expectations. And average hourly earnings were up 4.8% from a year ago, which missed expectations by 0.1%.
That's a hit.
And then initial claims came in at 222,000. And continuing claims came in under 2 million. So really there was a ton of good labor numbers this week, but that headline number on the non-farm payrolls report was terrible.
Yeah. Then when you start to analyze these things and you can't justify, there are ways to dig a little deeper. The way you do that, the statistics for this sort of thing are in the parlance of the Bureau of Labor Standards in D.C., which is actually a bunch of very competent statisticians. They've been doing it for a long time, and they seem to me over time to be relatively unbiased and unflappable. Well, they usually are easy to sort of reconcile. They've got the employer survey that they do. They have X numbers of businesses, larger and not so large, that they call and say, okay, what changed in the last month? And that's how they derive the number of jobs that were created or lost during the month. But they also have a system of polling individual households called the household survey. And the household survey, as I said, generally kind of makes sense when it's combined with all the other things you're seeing. ADP is private employers, and the households include things like the self-employed, people who start gigs or start companies or whatever. But this time, the headline number 210 is the employer survey, but the household survey showed an addition of 1,126,000 new jobs. And how does that fit in with 210,000 or 500,000 or whatever? Well, it says that there are a lot of people who are working now who weren't a month ago. But they're not necessarily working at jobs where they would be picked up on company payrolls. So it could be people are doing gig work, people who just took a part-time job to the holidays. It can be self-employed people starting businesses. And a lot of these people in the gig economy will wind up working for companies that they have contracted with. So that will turn into jobs later. But in general, if you look at what happens and you start to talk about, well, the layoffs are small and the overall unemployment claims are shrinking, it's hard to justify that when you look at just one side of the equation or even two sides of the equation. So when you add the third one in, it makes a bit more sense. The other thing that people don't like to talk about because they're in the headline business, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, they talked about the 210,000 being a great big miss, but they didn't really talk too much about the 82,000 that were added for the prior 2 months. That takes it up to almost 300,000, still not what they expected, but a heck of a lot better, in my opinion. So you have to look at a lot of different things to truly understand it. What it doesn't point to, in my opinion, is an economy that's falling apart. There are a lot of people who disagree with me, and they're free to do so, but it just doesn't compute to me. Thoughts?
No. In an economy that's falling apart, people have a hard time finding a job and making rent, and that is just not what's happening right now. And you're right. There's a ton of people who are disagreeing with that statement, and I don't understand where they're getting that from. I've been on the road a good bit recently and across the U.S., and everywhere I go, there is a sign in the window that says help wanted. I mean, if you want a job right now, you'll have a job the next day. It's crazy how many open positions, and that is not the sign of a weak economy. I just don't understand where that sentiment is coming from.
But
now,
you did explain part of it to me, though, with your statistic about the unemployed people.
Which one?
That half of the unemployed aren't looking?
Oh, yeah. I found an article this week that said that half of unemployed people don't plan on looking for a job. They're not currently looking for a job. They just don't. And these were people that were employed pre-COVID. Now, why? Your guess is as good as mine.
Because they can.
Yeah, I guess, but that seems crazy to me.
Stop paying these people.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you also touched on another important change in the dynamic of the way that people think about work these days. It was already happening pre-COVID. People were taking gig work, and they were working for Uber. They were working for Shipt. They were working for there's so many different companies. There's like Care.com where you can be a nanny. There's just tons and tons of opportunities out there that aren't traditional jobs. They're not going to a place of business at 9 a.m. and staying till 5 p.m. and working at that place. They're working whenever they want. They're defining their own hours. And it turns out people really like that. The flexibility of making your own hours trumps the rigid, structured weekly paycheck that's guaranteed, but also with benefits, but comes with that inflexibility. So I think it's just a shift in the way that people think about work these days, and I don't think that's going away, even as the economy does return to quote-unquote normal. I don't think people are going to give up that freedom.
There's also an age-related component in this thing. They're finding now that instead of like it used to be, and this is for a couple of reasons, but people age 65 and up are not returning to the workforce like they used to. And it has a couple of components, as I say. One of them is the success of the stock market has a lot of retirement accounts up where the fear of retiring without enough money for many people is dissipating. And, of course, it's COVID-related, as so many things are. But in this case, a lot of them don't want to get back into a situation that could put them in some kind of danger from COVID. So what that comes down to on the bottom line is 65 and up people, once they leave their job, only 20% have any intention of going back into the workforce. But you know how many people, how many baby boomers are turning 65 every day. And when a bunch of these people retire, you're talking about an extreme shortage of good talent. The quality problem today in trying to hire people is astronomical. They cannot find people who are qualified, and a lot of it is because the more qualified people, people in my generation, are not making themselves available anymore, and it's really, really hurting the overall jobs picture. But it's not the economy doing it. It's just some oddities. All right, we got to take another break, and we'll come back and talk about all kinds of things. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam, as we told everybody earlier, is doing a remote from the Atlanta area because you had a game already, didn't you? Soccer game?
Yeah. Had a 1-0 loss this morning. It was a really good game.
Sounds like it.
The other team kicked a beautiful goal right where the goalie just couldn't get it. It was a great game, though.
Oh, good. I'm sure she's disappointed, but you can't win them all.
Yes. Nope.
Couple things I want to wrap up. First off, the trivia question is still open. What percentage of your pre-tax wages was Social Security designed to replace upon your retirement? It's a whole number between, obviously, 0 and 100. And I'll even give you a hint. It's not 0. So it's between 1 and 100. That makes it really a lot easier. Another detail before we beat up this jobs thing any worse. Some of you who have listened to us a long time understand that there's an adjustment that is published along with all the numbers every month called the CES birth-death adjustment. And what it does is it tries to estimate the number of people working in companies that were created that month but haven't shown up yet on payrolls versus the companies that closed down and they haven't necessarily shown up as being unemployed either. But when you see a number like 1,126,000 new jobs, you got to think, if you've been watching this for a few years, you've got to think, well, they at least 300-400 of those jobs they have to have thrown in from the birth-death adjustment because it's just so huge. And it wasn't. That number was 12,000 last month, which means they got their documentation from the horse's mouth, as they called households, and that just makes this whole goofy report a whole bunch more palatable or believable or something like that. But it just didn't happen, and I found that rather odd. But I just wanted to throw it in because I know some people do exactly what we do. I've also got one mea culpa. That is that we realized a couple seconds after we signed off last week that we had not given out the answer to the trivia question, which was the highest inflation-adjusted price for a gallon of gas, and I think our guesses came up into the 4-something range. It's actually $5.23 in 2008. So if you think you're bad off now, A, you are, but B, it could have been worse. Just a little something to even it up.
Let's hope we don't see those numbers. And you have to remember that is adjusted for inflation. So today it would have to go significantly higher to get to where it was in 2008, which, man, that would not be fun.
But you know what's kind of scary? That was only 13 years ago. The power of compounding even small inflationary numbers should just stagger your imagination. And it's not something you can handle without thinking about it, talking about it, and doing something about it. As we know, our inflation adjustment for Social Security, which I received yesterday, is 5.9%. And, of course, the inflation adjustment for Medicare, which comes out of there, was a little higher than that at 14.5%. So we netted out with something like an increase, but it certainly wasn't a real big one, something about 3.8. And that is just an adjustment. Inflation is still going on, so every month that's going to be worth less also. And people have to be very, very wary of that kind of thing. Anyway, let's see. We wanted to talk about changes. We all know that Social Security is in trouble. It's been in trouble. There's been a lot of talk about how much trouble it's in. There are various estimates of what year the partial bankruptcy or the cutback is. If it's not fixed, right now the law says that it's only going to be able to pay out about 78% of current benefits. So that is unpalatable to people who are of Social Security age or are getting close to it. And a strange thing occurs with that group every year. They vote, and they vote consistently. And nobody in Congress wants to be undone by Social Security. But the weird part is that the easiest way to get undone by Social Security is to actually propose a change. It's been it's terrible. It's been deemed the third rail of politics, meaning it's electric. If you start talking about it and you start saying we got to raise taxes or lower benefits or whatever the thing may do, historically, that gets you a one-way ticket out of the halls of Congress. Reagan pulled it off back in 83, I think it was, but he had sort of run on it, and people were a little bit accustomed to it, and they did it 30 years in the future. Those 30 years are up, and did it solve that problem for 30 years? Yes. But was it permanent? No. What are we going to do? Well, here's some things that have been proposed by various senators and congressmen just in the year 2021. Democrat Raul Grijalva: no longer can the funds from Social Security be garnished for your debts. Okay, it seems pretty user-friendly to me. Democrat John Larson adopts a CPIE for the elderly and applies the payroll tax above $400,000 in annual earnings. Now, the CPIE is still a controversial thing. It's supposed to represent the market basket of goods that older people buy. They have done a couple calculations on it, and at least for a couple of months, it actually comes out higher than the one we're using now. So I am withholding my judgment on that. But applying the payroll tax above $400,000 is going to be very unpalatable for some very wealthy and powerful people. Number three, Democrat Al Lawson, basically the same as the Larson proposal, but it applies to earnings above $250,000. So your little gap would go from about $149,000 to $250,000, and then you'd start paying the whole 6.2 again. And this is not going to sit well with those same people. It'll sit less well. There's a fellow that you might have heard of. His name is Rick Scott, and his proposal prohibits withholding any benefits for vaccination status. Doesn't have anything to do with funding, except if you're not vaccinated. And I think it's a common sense measure that Congress ought to do. Number five, Democrat Cynthia Axne ensures that Social Security offices be fully staffed during business hours and answer their phones. Well, that sounds pretty user-friendly, too. Number six, Democrat Peter DeFazio combines benefits from other proposals so he can get his name in the news before he retires from Congress. I can find no other reason to see him do what he did, but he just announced his retirement, so he had to leave something on the table, apparently. Seven, Democrat Gwen Moore raises benefits for low earners, older retirees, students up to age 26, and increased taxes on wage earners. Very nonspecific about that tax increase. Number eight, Democrats John Larson and Ron Wyden requires paper statements for most people unless you waive them. And I'm of two minds on that one, too. It certainly doesn't hurt to have this applies to some young people and all current recipients. I mean, you know, I'll give them a pass on that and see what Congress does. Number nine, Democrat Sherrod Brown expands eligibility for SSI benefits. That might be a great idea to some, but who pays for it? Number 10, Representative Tom Reed improves benefits for surviving spouses who are disabled and those in two-income households. That sounds nice, too, doesn't it? There is a slight problem as I go over the entire list in that I don't see any proposals to save Social Security. Did you hear anything, Adam, in there that you thought might save Social Security?
I did not, and like you said, that's the part that gets politicians unelected or makes their jobs go away.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on either. It's
no.
Very, very unpopular.
Right, and when you start talking about raising taxes again, Now, we fought this thing, and by we, I mean a couple of people like Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin have fought raising that top marginal rate for the higher earners. And I think they're going to get away with that for a while. I certainly hope so. But then you're talking about adding an absolutely massive tax onto those same people. So if you're against raising taxes on the wealthy, then you sure aren't looking like it, guys. This is going to be a massive tax increase, much bigger than adding a percent to the upper bracket or anything like that. So at this point, I'd say they still get a fail. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back for the last section. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question remains out there, and the lines remain open, 904-222-8255. What percentage of your pre-retirement wages was Social Security designed to replace? Background something in there, don't know what it was. Anyway, there's some weird things that go on this time of year.
Yes, I'm still here.
Hello.
Anybody?
Hello.
My screen is not working.
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Who's on two? Hello. Who's the male?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I hear a female.
Good.
I hear a female too, but I'm not a female.
Yes. Okay, well, let's let the ladies go first.
Go ahead.
Pat, I'm sorry about the phone problem. They've been a little
not
screwed
a
this month.
And I would like to guess the trivia question. This is just a guess.
Uh-huh.
40%.
Uh-oh. See what happened? I aced out the mail because Pat just nailed it.
Okay.
Well, I've got your number, literally, figuratively, and all the other. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And wait.
No
I
problem.
Have a comment.
Oh, good.
I just read that Elon Musk, who is 50 years old, approximately, suggested that people over 70 should be barred from running for political office.
I love that guy more every day.
Anyhow, talk to you later. Have a good one.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Do we still have some people listening in here? Apparently not. I don't know what's going on out here, but we're not getting the usual notifications that we're looking at on the screen, so got a little messy, and I do apologize for that. Hopefully we can figure out the problem by next week. Anyway, how about this one? Folks, a new rule lets debt collectors message you on social media. Gee, what a good idea, huh? So there are rights that apparently just came into practice this particular week that modify the Fair Debt Collection Practices that were passed way back in 1977. Now, debt collectors can reach out to you, but, okay, we get another phone call. We're using hand signals around here. Hang on. Good morning.
Good morning. I got a question. In 2020, was there an extra benefit from Social Security when you file your income tax?
First off, can
other
I have
than the 15%, you only pay on 15. You only pay on 85%. Was there another benefit in 20?
Now, first off, can I get your name? I hate to call you.
Yeah,
caller.
Al.
Okay, thanks, Al. No, there's nothing I'm aware of that was related to Social Security. What we did not have to do was take required minimum distributions from retirement plans, which cut your income for most people.
Yeah.
But there was no other tax or otherwise proposal that I know of that directly affected Social Security.
Yeah, okay. All right. I didn't know. I was looking at my last year's tax return, and I did it on TurboTax, and I was looking at to see how much money I had to pay compared to where it was last year on income tax, and the amount of Social Security that it showed as taxable income was less than the 85% of the gross amount.
Yeah, it's a two-tiered calculation. And if your modified adjusted gross income is below one certain point, I don't have the numbers in my head, then you pay zero. None of it is taxable. But if it's between that number and the higher number, let's say 18,000 to 35,000, those are just rough estimates, then yeah, you pay on half of it. But if it's over that top number, you pay on 85% of it.
So it's a tiered amount.
Yes, zero, 50%, or 85%. Brought to you by Bill Clinton back in the old days.
Okay, so from zero to 50, you pay that, and then it goes up
to 85. Yeah, and actually it's a little bit strange because it's actually prorated in there as you go from the 50% level to the 85 level. So when you're doing planning, you usually overshoot it a little bit. But that's what happened to you. You fell down below the 85% threshold.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I'd forgotten about Bill Clinton on that. Well,
yeah,
I guess he did do something there, huh?
Yeah. I never figured out how he got away with that one. That's raising taxes on elderly people. But he did, yeah, and it's been that way ever since.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's exactly what it is then.
All right. Thank you. Glad we got your question answered. All right. Have a good one.
Yeah,
you
sure did. I was kind of pondering it real hard.
By the way.
The program must have made a mistake or something.
By the way, prepare for disappointment. They're back.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Yeah. That's
a good thing to bring up, too. If you haven't taken your RMD for
that's very important.
2021, you should probably look at doing that soon. A lot of the custodians are backed up.
Mm-hmm.
They're understaffed, just like everybody else. And we keep getting warning after warning from TD Ameritrade that if you haven't done it, you should do it soon. So I would heed that warning.
Yeah, I've been spreading that out far and wide to people who aren't even clients. Just nobody knows about it. And it's not a guarantee that you're going to have a problem. But if there's even a slight chance of having a problem, the penalty for noncompliance is 50% of whatever wasn't taken, and nobody wants to pay that, and I don't think anybody wants to sue a custodian to try to get it back because it wouldn't be worth it. So just know that. Start thinking about those things. It was so much fun when they disappeared, but they're back, and they're back with a vengeance. That's that. And anyway, the debt collectors have to be subject to some rules. The message must be private. Debt collector must identify themselves as such, and the debt collector must provide you with a method to stop receiving the messages. So here's what they owe you if you ask, if you get one of these things. The debt collector's name and mailing information, the creditor's name, any account numbers associated with the debt, an itemization of the total debt, including interest, fees, payments, and credits, the current amount of debt of the validation notice, and information about your debt collector's rights and how to dispute the debt. So if you find yourself being messaged on any of the social media platforms, know that you have some rights as well, and you can actually take steps to get rid of these people. That's a good thing, I believe. I don't know if we have time to get into more of these. Some of the stuff just takes longer than we've got. But I want to talk also about us. Let's tell it like it is, some shameful self-promotion that we don't engage in enough of. It's a great article from a great website, Investopedia. And those of you who followed us for a long time know how much we enjoy Investopedia. Their information is good, it's concise, and it's accurate. Well, they came up with one that, of course, caught my eye because it says 5 traits of successful financial advisors. So think about the people that you work with while I hit a couple of these. The key takeaways: successful financial advisors have a large book of client business and a track record of performance and service. Well, I've been in here 19, almost 20 years. Adam has been in, 7, 8, somewhere in there?
7 years now.
Okay. Getting clients and having them stick with you and recommend you means professional and putting your clients first. Well, we do that. We are fiduciaries as our people who deal like we do in a registered investment advisory, and they accept fiduciary responsibility as we do. At the same time, you need to have a deep understanding of the markets, analytical skills and training, and have a passion for finance. Well, we have exhibited that for many, many years, long before we ever got into the business. One of the reasons I wanted to bring this up, that fiduciary responsibility, how many of you out there know that you might actually be responsible as a fiduciary? If anybody in your world has a trust set up for other members of the family or anything like that, or even just set up as a trust that gets created when they're gone or whatever, if you are named a trustee of that trust, you are subject to fiduciary responsibility, which means you have a prudent man standard for how one has to invest. Why did I bring this up? Because the University of Miami just got fined $1.9 million because the people who were overseeing their pension investment did not live up to their fiduciary standard. They were using some CREF and TIAA funds, and they were underperforming the market, and they were not putting their pensioners first. And the lawyers, of course, were the only winners. That's $600,000 out of the settlement. That just kind of goes without saying. But my question is merely, are we paying the people back? I don't know. More on this next week. Have a nice weekend, and we'll see you then. This is the Bamley Financial Hour.